You're listening to the Bragman Breakdown Podcast. Here's your host, Jackson Bragman.
Bragman Breakdown, episode 107. Welcome in. I'm your host, Jackson Bragman. Good one for the people today. Tom Carballo, a.k.a. Mojo of the Mojo in the Morning Show, joins the pod this week. I had the privilege of interning for Mojo on his show last summer, where he showed me the ropes to the broadcasting industry. In addition to that, there were a lot of coffee runs, a lot of screening phone calls, but it was an all-around great learning experience. It was a lot of fun hanging out with Mojo and all the other people on the Mojo in the Morning Show. Mojo and I talked this week about his start in broadcasting, coming out of Chicago, talking about how he got his foot in the door, a vital lesson that he learned when he was my age working a similar internship that I did for him last summer. You're not going to want to miss that. And all of the behind-the-scenes stuff and moving parts that goes into making Mojo in the Morning the number one morning talk show in the state of Michigan. All that and so much more with Mojo, one of my favorite interviews I've ever done for sure. After my chat with Mojo, I had the incredible opportunity over the weekend to head to downtown Detroit, Ford Field, and see SummerSlam, one of the biggest pay-per-views on the WWE calendar, a bucket list opportunity for me as someone who's a huge wrestling fan but doesn't necessarily always get to talk about wrestling on the show. And I decided that I wanted to talk about my experience at Ford Field and share some of my thoughts about the current state of WWE. So you're going to hear that after my interview with Mojo at the end of the show. Packed show this week. All that right here on episode 107 of the Bragman Breakdown Podcast. Tom Carballo, Mojo in the Morning. Do people usually introduce you as Tom Carballo? When was the last time you heard that, like on the street? I'm sure people yell Mojo, people yell all sorts of things, or even in formal settings. I don't know if people call you Tom.
I think the only time I've ever heard it was at your dad's doctor's office when they're calling me in the back to come for my appointment.
That's what I was going to say, because my dad, that's how my dad refers to you. And obviously, I know Mojo well. I had the wonderful opportunity to intern for him last summer. And this is kind of a year in the making. We said let's make this happen. And finally, we are here. We're making it happen. And Mojo's spending some time with us this afternoon. So thank you for coming on.
I have no idea where to look. It's funny. I deal with my phone all the time, but I always have somebody do my own social media for me. So I'm never one of those people that sits there and goes, okay, this is where you take a selfie, because I'm not a big selfie person.
Right. No, you're all good right now. I would say, Okay. Yeah, most of this is going to be purely audio. We're not uploading the full thing for nice. Video. We might have a couple little bites for social media, but for the most part, you're all good. So don't worry about it. You're chilling at home. Looks like you're having a good time.
Who do you know who listens to your podcast? Are you in contact with a lot of your regulars?
Yeah, through social media, I some people, I don't get ahead of myself. Occasionally, people will be nice enough to reach out. I enjoyed this interview that you did, especially with the squash content that I do, which as you know, I'm a squash player, and I've been very lucky to interview some of the best squash players in the world. The squash community is very cool. They're very supportive in reaching out. So sometimes, yes, and I try to keep in contact via all sorts of social medias, and you set me up to plug at Bragman Breakdown Pod on Instagram, at Bragman Breakdown on TikTok. So you know the importance of social media right now with your show. Let's start there, actually. I was going to kind of get to this later, but let's start there. How has your job in the last 23 years of doing this in the Detroit market, at least, changed with the evolution of cell phones, with the evolution of social media, with the evolution of streaming? You recently said that the majority of your listening audience is now on streaming. So there are slightly more people that are listening to you with these things than they are in the car or on a physical actual radio. So how does that change how you go about your job on the air?
Well, the biggest thing is, and it's about 50-50. I think I said majority, but I think it's the majority just because I know that we're still, trying to get people to actually go to work and be in their cars a little bit more often. But they are in their cars listening. So majority of people do listen when they're in their cars, whether they're streaming or they are listening to us live on one of the radio stations that we're on. Time has made it so much easier to be able to listen to your favorite, radio show, watch your favorite television show, see your favorite movie, even, communicate obviously with your loved ones that you don't get a chance to normally see face to face. You can see them face to face on a FaceTime call. I mean, we all know what the evolution of the smartphone has done for us. For my job specifically, it's enabled me to understand that as soon as I get done talking about something or doing a break, it used to be it was floating out in air like this, and it was gone. You've seen those movies, right, where a person's thoughts are above them, and or you see, like, some of the science fiction, old science fiction movies, they used to do that where the person's, the chemical makeup was right above them, floating above them. That was kind of what I used to always say, that that was radio, that when you
That you do a
talked,
great segment that's off into the ether, never to be heard again, which is
listen,
now it's clipped a million times. Yeah, so.
there was sometimes, Jackson, where you would do a break and you'd be like, holy crap, did I have a tape in to record it? And you didn't, and you would have to try to reenact it, with a tape in. Nowadays, there's if we're not taping it to podcast it, somebody is, because there's 8,000 streaming services that tape pretty much anything that is being done on radio and television. So it's been great. So when we do something now, we don't do it just for the now, we do it for the now and the laters.
Yeah. So I obviously we're gonna spend a lot of time on Mojo in the Morning, and that's that's what you're known for, and you're a pillar of the community and all this stuff. And there's plenty I want to ask you about that, but I want to start at the beginning. When did you start thinking about going into broadcasting yourself? And obviously now you have a son in Tampa who's following in your footsteps, and he's has his own show. And so it's kind of come full circle, but I want to start with you as a kid growing up. How did you decide this seems of interest to me? Maybe this is something I want to pursue as a career.
Probably at the same age that you have. I know you probably, what would you say, in middle school you kind of got the itch?
Yeah, probably, yeah, seventh, eighth grade, and then joined radio in ninth grade, and yeah.
So when I was your age, right now, I knew that this was going to be something I wanted to do, but not what I do. My goal was I wanted to, I used to watch Cubs baseball games, and they were on WGN in Chicago, and Harry Carey was the announcer, the legendary Hall of Fame, broadcaster, the holy cow and take me out to the ball game guy. And I would re hear him at the end of the games, thank his producer director, Arnie Harris, who was the, guy responsible for the broadcast. And I knew I could never be Harry Carey, because I looked at Harry Carey like Tom Brady, like I would look at Tom Brady right now. He was the GOAT of broadcasting. And I know I can't be Tom Brady, but maybe I could be Tom Brady's coach, or Tom Brady's trainer, or Tom Brady's water boy, And so when I heard Arnie Harris's name, I'm like, wow, I wonder what that guy does. And then I explored what does a producer do, a producer director for sporting events, and I realized, man, everything that happens, the cameras that are shown, the replays that are done, Harry reading commercials, he's the guy directing it. So I said, you know what? That's what I want to do. I want to be involved somehow that way. And then I went to go to college, and I went to a communications college, or I was accepted at University of Wisconsin Madison. And I needed a summer school credit to get in, as I wasn't smart enough to get in on my own. And I took a class in downtown Chicago at Columbia College. And that gave me the okay. It was a school that had all the equipment there. It produced a ton of interns for Chicago Cubs broadcasts and for local radio stations in Chicago. And that was my. I'm gonna get my foot in the door through doing what you did for me last year, which was basically shadowing and interning some of the bigger talents that were in the market.
And what was the most exciting part of your job as an intern, Mojo? What did your job consist of?
Well, I'll tell you the first thing that I ever learned being an intern.
Because I know there's a good story that comes with this, is the reason I ask. So I'm setting you up here.
Yeah. My first, and did I tell you the story, the
I
Tiger
believe so.
King story? So I interned at a news station, and when I interned at it was an all news station, and the on air personality had asked me to go get him food, and directly across the street from the radio station was a McDonald's, and he asked me for Burger King, and I thought to myself, I'm like, do you want McDonald's or Burger King? And I asked him again because I didn't want to screw it up. And I said, okay, so let me go over your order again. What do you want? And he said he wanted Burger King, and he gave me his order. And I left and I walked out of the building. This is before Uber. And I walked out and I said, holy shit, you know, I have no idea. And I'm sorry to swear, but I, holy cow.
You're good.
I wonder where there's a Burger King, and you couldn't go on a phone and Google it, you know, because you didn't have cell phones back then. So I flagged a cabbie and I asked the cab driver to take me to Burger King. And as you know, going into a big city, I know you and your parents have traveled to Chicago or to New York. When you ask a cabbie where anything is, they know it. They don't. It's funny. They don't even need to look at an address. So he took me to a Burger King. It cost me, you know, $5 or something like that for the ride. And then I went, ordered the food, took another cab back to the station. That was another $5. And I came back with his Burger King. And all he gave me was, and his Burger King probably cost a little over $5. So I actually spent my own money to get to Burger King. And when I walked back into the station, he asked me where his change was. And I said, well, I used it for the transportation, and I think he knew right away this guy had to put his own money into this to do it. And after his broadcast was over with, he had basically said to me, I gave you a challenge, and your challenge was I wanted you to take a task on and see how well you did doing that task. And you actually did great. You handled it well. And he said, you could have come back into the building and said, hey, there's a McDonald's across the street, but there, I don't know where Burger King is. Instead, you had the wherewithal to go and just figure it out yourself. And he said, what I was doing was testing you, because there's going to be a news story someday where we're going to need you to go do something, and we can't tell you everything because we're on the air. The on-air personality is on the air. You got to think for yourself. And I just gave you your first lesson in thinking for yourself. And I thought to myself, God, what a dick, you know, but it was the best lifelong lesson that I could have ever had, because not always is things going to be easy for you. You know, if it was easy for us, you know, I'd probably be Howard Stern in that Mojo, you know, I'd probably be the biggest in media possible, because I'd want it to be that way, right? You'd want, you know, to be as successful as you can be. And it's not going to be, but if you can figure it out yourself, and if you can use your brain, you know, that we're blessed by God to have, then we can figure out a way to make whatever be accomplished.
Yeah.
And so that was it. I will say this to you. I know I've taught interns and people that have worked for me lessons along the years. That lesson was the greatest lesson that I probably ever got from anybody, because it was a lesson in thinking on your own and being your own person.
How do you pass that on to your kids, specifically, you know, Joe, who's in Tampa? Like, how does that lesson relate to him, who obviously has, you know, has a father in broadcasting, who has kind of an idea of what the lifestyle is about? But how do you kind of take that and say, you know, this is not smooth sailing. Sometimes you're not going to know what to do, and you kind of got to figure things out on the fly. And how, through what way do you kind of push that on him?
Well, I think my biggest thing is just through the actions of my wife, his mom, and the actions of me, knowing that we're not the type of people that make excuses for things. We're not the people that look for the easy way out. You know, we've always kind of taught them over the years that, Sometimes the hardest things, sometimes the best things in life are the hardest things to get. And then sometimes the best things in life are right there at your nose. So just being coming, work hard, stay focused, don't make excuses. I know how your parents are. Your mom and dad are both incredible parents, and you've been blessed because they're extremely supportive of you. And this is not an easy career. And I think I've had this conversation with your dad, because your dad's done way more than I'll ever do in my life being a doctor, and he's one of the smartest people I've ever met. But when this job used to be even harder to get into than it is right now, because you're in it, you look what you're doing right now. You got a podcast. I mean, that was something that at your age I couldn't do. I think I told your dad this, that every job is hard nowadays. That if you wanted to be a professional squash player, it's just as hard as being a doctor. It's just going to take time. And if you wanted to be, the next, Mike Tirico, I will never tell anybody that they can't do it. I believe that, your hard work is going to pay off. And you look at you're crafting. This is we're taping this on a afternoon, beautiful sunshine in summertime, and this is work. You could be hanging out with your buddies and goofing around, or going to a movie or doing whatever, and you're working on your craft. And you'll never forget this when you are doing what you want to do later in life, because this is what got you there.
In terms of the prep that you put in for your show, would you say now that you're established, you're 23 years in, you put more or less prep into your show every week than you did when you started?
Way more. We just had ratings come back in, and we had the highest ratings that the show has ever had in the history of the show. And that day that the ratings came in and we had the highest ratings that we've ever had in the history of the show, I was at the radio station until 3 o'clock in the afternoon, taping and editing some stuff.
And for the people listening who don't know, what time do you get to the radio station every morning? And what time are you waking up in the morning? Well, just for context.
Wake up at 3:30 a.m., get to the radio station by 5:30, prepping at home for 2 hours. And on the air till 10:30. So I technically could be on a golf course if I wanted to at 10:45. And we stay at the radio station till 12:30 to 2 o'clock every day. So it's definitely not a 9-to-5 job, but it's I call it a 3:30 till 2:30 job, but I think we prep more now than we ever did. And then one of the reasons why is back in the day, I didn't have all the devices to be able to prep.
Yeah.
Now I feel like I'm more connected. It's a good thing and a bad thing. I think you got to live your life a little bit more. But I also think that, if you choose to do something that you love to do, it will never feel like work ever in your life, and it doesn't feel like work. I mean, there are times where I'm exhausted and I wish I wouldn't have committed to something. And then there are times that I wish I could get it right the first time, so I didn't have to tape it 12 times after that, or, have something screw up. but it's definitely, it's always a process. And the moment it starts feeling like work is probably the moment that I need to think about doing something else.
Yeah. And that's, so it's work. And the way that kind of both of us have described it is, it's hard because it's work in the sense that you're sacrificing going out and having fun. But for me, and for, it sounds like for you, I don't look at doing this as work. It's still fun for me. It's a challenge. Yeah. And I have to kind of, I have to probably commit a lot more focus and dedication to it than I would for, sitting and mindlessly watching a TV show with my friends. But but it doesn't feel like work, and it's rewarding too. So I want to ask you about growing up in Chicago, and then you kind of bounced around for a little bit. You end up here in Detroit, maybe 7 or 8 years after you're out of school. What was that process like? How did you end up in this market? And then that obviously leads into the morning show that you have built into the number one
Yeah.
morning show in the state.
So I started doing radio when I was 18, 19 years old, really 19. When I was 18 is was when I had that internship that I told you about. And then I started doing, and then within a year, I was able to work at the top 40 station in Detroit or in Chicago. And I was going to college at the same time. I didn't finish college. I had the luck of when I was at B96, I was an intern and a part-time guy. I got to be on the air part-time, and I got the lucky draw of having somebody who was a full-timer not show up for work. And you always hear the story about if you're ever asked to do something, don't say no. And you'll never know when your opportunity is going to come. Well, that was my deal. The person didn't show up to work and then kind of flaked out and didn't show up to work for a few days. So I filled in, and then eventually they offered the opportunity to me to fill in permanently until they found a new host. And at that time, I was getting paid really good money. I mean, I was making, like crazy money at that time. It was considered to be a lot. And, so I quit school because they would ask me to fill in during the school day, or during my class times. And so I went to a professor and I said, "Hey, I got this opportunity. I'm working at the station. I think that this is going to lead to a full-time job. What should I do with school?" And he said, "Well, everybody here is going to school to do what you're doing right now." And he said, "You could say no to them and continue school. And then in the end, hope that that opportunity is still there, or take that opportunity and one day go back to school." And that, was what I did. And I never had to one day go back. Although I do wish I would have.
Why? Why do you wish you went
Did.
back to school?
Because I'm 53 and I know that, once my kids are done with school and out of school, I could probably retire if I wanted. I wouldn't have to work anymore financially. But I also have always thought about what my life after radio would be. And one of the things I wish I could have done was go to law school and possibly done entertainment law. I thought that would have been kind of fun. Or politics was another one too. And I just thought having an education would have been good. But I don't think you need it, and I say this now more than ever. When I was a kid, guys that I went to school with, about 10% of them became plumbers and pipe fitters and did things that didn't require education, but technical education. And I think that that is so important nowadays. We don't have enough of that. But I think that what ended up happening with me was a case of, and this has happened to so many people I've noticed lately, is you find yourself doing and working towards a goal, and where some people work towards having their college life and the fun of the college life. My college life was started once I got into radio and I started going to bars and doing, crazy promotions and things like that. Like, I feel like I'm living my college life right now without having to go to college.
And that's very funny. The first thing I thought was when you mentioned that, you're just kind of waiting for your opportunity and the main guy didn't show up, is it's very apropos. Earlier you mentioned, Tom Brady, who was obviously kind of a sixth round draft pick, was kind of flying under the radar, no name guy, and no one knows who this guy is. And Drew Bledsoe goes down for the Patriots in 2000 and he steps in and the rest is history. So you got to take advantage of of those opportunities.
You and I have very similar analogies, because that was actually an analogy I've told people numerous times, that, you know, this guy who realistically was drafted never to play. I mean, he was probably drafted to be on the practice squad, right? Because not all sixth round draft pick quarterbacks end up being right. the greatest quarterback of all time. And it truly was, that was inspirational for me. I think that's why I started liking Tom Brady, was because I realized that, you know, he's the guy that, you know, didn't take no. And if you look at the pictures of him from his early days of coming out of college, he was not in great shape.
No.
You know, he didn't have a great throwing. Yeah, no, he didn't have a great throwing arm. He couldn't run. He wasn't very fast. He was just smart. And he worked his ass off. You know, he was hard worker. And, you know, that's, it's amazing to look at guys like, look at Tom Brady, look at Dan Gilbert, you know, look at Matt Ishbia, you know, look at the local guys that are here in town, and understand that they, you know, Gilbert especially, he wasn't born into the wealth, you know, he made it himself. And neither was Matt. I mean, Matt's family had money, but Matt took it to the next level. But, you know, nobody tells them, you know, you can't do something, and doesn't look back on it now and think that they were idiots. But I like to say that with my career too, that every time somebody said no, it was like a learning lesson for me, you know, as to why did they say it and what can I do to get a yes next time? And sometimes I never got yeses, you know, some people never gave me yeses. They just didn't understand me. And I don't hold that against them. I think that, you know, everybody's taste is different. Just like Tom Brady. I mean, I guarantee you about 10 years into Tom Brady's career, still, there were probably people, coaches that never thought that he was going to be the greatest of all time. Now they can't say that anymore, you know?
Yeah, no, it's especially in an industry like radio, it's impossible to have the 100% approval rating, but you just kind of gotta, you know, gotta continue to work and eventually find the right people. So you were at this top 40 station in Chicago, you're paying your dues there, you drop out of school. When do you, you know, what takes place, and then how do you get the call from Detroit? Hey, we want you to come here and do a show in Michigan.
So I was doing that, working also part-time in Milwaukee. And then a program director of the Chicago station said to me, he goes, hey, you could stay here and you could probably do full-time fill-in, but would probably not have anything other than that for you. And one of the guys that I worked for that I did an internship for told me I had to go pay dues in a smaller market. So I actually took a job in Tucson, Arizona, started there as a night DJ. Worked there at night and was the APD of the station, moved to afternoons, and then eventually got the morning show. And the morning show that I replaced was Jimmy Kimmel. So Jimmy was the morning guy, with a guy by the name of Mike Elliott, and they did a really raunchy kind of guy leaning show. And, it was very funny. It was so funny. The problem
What's the
was,
show he
was
did
so...
with Rogan on TV? That's I imagine it's kind of something like that. Do you know what I'm talking about? The
So no, he did it with Joe Rogan. With Rogan might have been a guest or something on it.
Right?
It
yeah,
was,
later on, obviously. Mike Elliott.
It was
said?
No, he did the Man Show.
Yeah, the Man Show. That's what I was thinking of.
With what the hell's his name? The big podcaster also, I forget, I don't know, hold on, I'm Googling it right now.
Yeah,
it'll kill me the rest of
the
time.
We're on the same page.
So he did, there you go. The man show with, Adam Carolla.
Oh, Adam Carolla. Yes.
Yeah. Who Adam Carolla has now changed his career. He's become a conservative. Kind of he was the first of podcasting. I don't know if you know that, but
yeah,
Adam Carolla was the
he was
first early podcaster. He left radio and Jimmy obviously went towards television, and but start did that morning show there for a while, and it was wild because I always joke, and actually Jimmy Kimmel back in the days when he would come on our show here in town and also in Arizona used to always laugh that I could do something that he could never do, and that was keep my radio job, because Jimmy could never keep a radio job. He would keep getting fired, and I honestly I wonder if nowadays if Jimmy Kimmel would have even gotten a shot on radio, because I feel like he probably would have gone straight to just podcasting, because he could do more, you know, without having to worry about what people were saying.
Right. The it's an interesting medium, obviously. What do you think are the pros and cons between, you know, radio and podcasting?
I think that radio, you got a chance to interact. You can interact by, you know, taking callers and have, and you can see things faster with that. That's why I think the medium is so much better than podcasting, because in podcasting, you have no idea what somebody's reaction is until you hear somebody tell you that they listen to something.
Right.
And I think with radio, you know what their reaction is based on the interaction that you get of them calling you.
Yeah, and it's instant. You know, you can't fake it. On a podcast, you can have a reaction to something and upload it, you know, 12 hours after something happens, and you can fine tune it and edit it. The radio
the
medium
other thing
is very intimate, and it's, yeah, immediate, obviously.
Well, yeah, and you, and honestly, sometimes you're speaking directly to the person. Podcasting, I feel like podcasting gets away with talking to general. But also the other thing too is podcasting is hard to, it's hard in both to quantify how many people are listening or what they're doing, because podcasting, not necessarily if somebody, you know, listens, do you know that they're listening the whole time? We're in radio, especially with the rating system, you can actually see if a person's listening and listening to, you know, when they tune out. So it gives you an idea of, it also gives you an idea of what maybe not to talk about next time, because you can kind of do a little research of seeing what people actually were not as excited listening
minute
to.
Minute by minute ratings. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you get to Detroit. What are your initial thoughts? Like, first kind of year in the market, what do you think about the community, about the callers, about your job? Are you overwhelmed, or how do you feel about your early years kind of in Detroit?
Well, I had to find people to work with. That was the toughest part. The toughest part was I had an established show in Arizona, and because Detroit had the reputation, and it still does, it's kind of gotten a little bit better, but nobody wanted to move with me. So nobody from Arizona wanted to come here. So I had to find people, and which was good, because it actually made me go out and find people locally that were living here. But I thought that the community was great. I was originally born in Chicago. So coming back from the West Coast, where, you know, it's a little kind of goofy, the Midwest has more values and people care. Radio is actually considered to them a big medium. I love the idea of raising my family, you know, and my kids here. I also loved, you know, one of the things I really loved was being able to work in a market like Detroit, where there was legends. You know, I mean, the time I came here, you know, JP McCarthy had already gone, Dick Pertin was still doing strong. And then there were guys like Jim Harper, Drew and Mike, you know, so there were some really cool names that were here. So it gave me an opportunity to be able to, you know, be around good radio, where people knew good radio.
Was it always Mojo in the Morning from the beginning of the show?
Yeah.
Okay. So how did you get the Mojo nickname? I don't think I've ever asked you this. Where did this come about? Oh,
just a name that held on for a while. That was a family name back in the day. So okay. It was my father's Cuban, and so had it as a name. And when I moved to Detroit, it's good that I kind of didn't move here with anybody, because If I moved here with my old co-host back in Arizona, the show was called Mojo and Betsy in the Morning. And I probably would have kept the same name. But moving by myself, I was like, I wanted to, I was like, I said, you know, I'm going to do this basically as something that I'm going to build. And then also the other thing too is if your name's on the show and you're the person making the decisions, at least you're having to control your own destiny. And I
Absolutely.
wasn't leaving my destiny up to, you know, a co-host or somebody else that, you know, a program director.
That's the best feeling in terms of in podcasting and in squash. I say this all the time because, you know, and I think, you know, obviously sports are a paradigm for life, is that I love the individual aspect because when I do well, when I succeed, then I, you know, it's because of me and I get the credit. And when I falter, I don't have to look to my right or my left and be like, you know, what the fuck? I can kind of, you know, sit with myself and say, I lost because I wasn't good enough for no other reason. What can I do to get better? And that's a very rewarding thing. So I think that's, I'm really glad that you said that. And when it comes to your job on the radio, I think the most baffling part of your job to me is how you guys are able to spend 20 hours a week on the air, you know, kind of talking about yourselves. And I think that that's a very interesting thing. Whereas in sports radio or these different types of radio, you're talking about other people and you have to do all the show prep and all this other stuff, but it becomes so personal when you're talking about yourself. And you did an interview with Christy McDonald at Channel 4 last month that I thought was spectacular. And there was some really powerful stuff in there about the power of your role in the community as a host of the number one morning radio show in the state. You're not just a talking head, you're someone kind of people turn to sometimes to laugh and sometimes to cry or to be comforted. And when you come to Detroit, you know, in your late 20s, I'm sure you're not thinking about that. You're thinking, I'm going to talk for a living. I'm going to do some ridiculous bits and, you know, hopefully it all works out. You're not thinking about how people are going to turn to you when there's a mass shooting that happens at Oxford High School or at Michigan State last year. And, you know, you told the story about how your son came out as gay and how impactful that was for people listening. And you're able to have this incredible impact on the community. So what does that role and responsibility mean to you?
Yeah, I never really think about the responsibility of it, but I do think about the fact that the beauty of being able to talk more about your personal life and to make when the show, our show used to be about bits. It used to be more about goofy, funny bits that, you know, made people laugh. And it was fun. It was really, really fun. The problem was eventually, you know, bits run out of ideas and people don't, right? You know, people can be themselves and just continue to grow as people. And one of the greatest things that I think that radio has kind of become before even podcasting was more personal to people, right? You know, it's like you can listen to a podcast that deals with just about anything. And you look at the podcasts that are the most successful, and they're usually something that relates to people. Like people like, you know, obviously they're crime and, you know, investigative type podcast, but people love the podcasts that are self-help. And that's kind of the cool thing. So, right? Is that one of your favorites?
Oh, of course. I mean, yeah, like I'm trying to remember the guys. I know I love that stuff. The Jay something, and he does a great job.
Shetty,
Yeah,
yeah, Jay
Jay
Shetty.
Shetty. These there are a couple that I've listened to one off, and they're great. And I wish I did, you know, did more of that stuff. I think it's phenomenal.
So here's the thing that I say to people, you know, with what we do as a show, the beauty is everybody has to be on every day. There's people on our show, and all it takes is, you know, you. Everybody to work hard and come prepared and pick up the slack, you know, when you're knowing that the other people on the show are struggling. And then when we're all on and everybody's having a good time, it makes it even that much better. So, but you know, there is a responsibility in doing what we do. And that's, you know, you too, you have a responsibility that, and I always say this to people, when you called and needed help and asked about radio, and your dad had reached out to me too, I take it upon myself. I want to see you be successful. So I'm not going to be easy on you. And I wasn't, I don't think, when you came in, but I also know that you got so much more to offer than even just being an intern. You're already a pretty seasoned talent right now, a young age of 18 years old, right?
Yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you.
So you got to, oops, somebody's calling me. That's my boss calling me. I'm gonna send him to voicemail. It's not always you can do that, but it is like 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, you're taking your nap right now. He doesn't have to know any different.
Yeah. Here's my guess with the majority of people that will watch this thing, that if they watch it and they're friends of yours, they possibly are wanting to get also into broadcasting. Or if they're watching this, they're friends of yours and they want to get into any kind of a career. And then their goal is, remember that Burger King McDonald's story that I told. Don't ask how I can do it. Just do it. And if you fail doing it at that point, like if I couldn't have found a Burger King, but I looked and searched for it, or maybe I couldn't afford a cab to get to the Burger King, then go back in and say, hey, you know what? There's no Burger King close and I don't have enough money for a cab. Don't make excuses. Just be honest and use the opportunity that you have to say, you know what, I'll do better next time. So
and my generation is, or I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say too many times nowadays, and you're going to say this with your generation, possibly too many times nowadays, people my age are making excuses as to, I got fucked because of this. You know what? You got fucked because you allowed yourself to get fucked.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't have said it better. It's really just my generation is the generation of excuses. I think even more so than, and we all do it regardless of age. But I think nowadays it's we have kind of been brought up in a way. And I see this especially in my community, and that at the first sign of adversity, people shut down. And I think that's where the Burger King story comes in, is like you look around and you're like, what the hell am I going to do? There's no Burger King. And you could have given up, but you tried and you succeeded in that instance. But as long as you try, you don't learn anything from giving up. If you tried to find the Burger King and you couldn't, then it's still a learning experience. And I think that's honestly a great, fantastic takeaway. On a lighter note, there's plenty of silly stuff that you guys have done and still do on the show. And part of that is talking about your family and embarrassing stuff. Like I said, you guys are talking about yourselves for 20 hours a week, so it's hard. You're always looking for content in your everyday life. If something funny happens, then that's your topic for the next day. I was a victim of this. I'm trying to remember. I think Mike said there was something about Mike, like I wanted to shake Mike's hand in the bathroom at we were at some remote event at the car dealership, and I officially introduced myself because we never met in person, and he was a bit disturbed that I shook his hand in the bathroom, which I did. In retrospect, I shouldn't have. See, that's a very good learning lesson. Is perhaps,
but you know what, though,
I should have found a more opportune time.
It made for great radio content.
It made for great radio. So that's kind of how your mind has to kind of be wired that way a little bit, where you're going through life and you're always looking for stuff. So where do you kind of draw the line between, like, all right, I wanna come up with funny stuff to share with the listeners, I want to be real and authentic, versus like, maybe I shouldn't share this or overshare? What's kind of the line that you find for yourself, and how do you go about every day when you're not physically sitting in the radio chair thinking about what you're going to talk about the next day?
Well, two things. One, I'll answer your question. Secondly, I will tell you this. You proved that you could laugh at yourself because you didn't get offended by that story, and you actually did a great job of playing with that, that story with Mike coming back about you, talking to him. There's so many times people take offense to it. And the problem is, you take offense to something, what ends up happening is, it's like improv. The first rule of improv is to don't say no. You know, you say no, then your bid is dead. I think that you know, there are so many times where I've thrown things at a wall and it didn't stick. And there's so many times where I've mentioned something on the radio and I probably shouldn't have. It was too raw and personal. And to just try to understand over time, you know, you're going to make mistakes. You might say something that you shouldn't. You might tell a story and it may not be interesting to others like you thought it was going to be, but you just learn from your mistake and figure it out.
Someone who did take offense to some questioning on your show in the past was a man by the name of Justin Bieber. What do you remember about that interview? Because I was doing my research for this and I stumbled upon that, which I already knew about in the back of my head. I knew there was this illustrious interview, but I listened to the whole thing and I listened to the little snippets before and after, and I found it to be very comical. So I guess the real question is not like what are your, you know, what happened. I guess I want you to tell the story for the listeners, but really, like, how do you deal with someone like that, where not a bad guy clearly, but maybe at that point in his life is a little bit is
He
young and is
was
getting a little bit
struggling.
big-headed, and you know, so.
He struggled. That was a bad time for him. You know, that actually was the start of his, you know, kind of going through some struggles. You know, he remember after that, then he got arrested for having exotic animals that he shouldn't have had, and he got arrested for exposure and peeing in buckets. And I mean, he did some stupid, you know, shit after that. I thank him for that because it helped get me a lot of publicity. So if I saw him today, I would tell him thank you. I think we took the ball and ran with it on that one. I mean, that was a great, you know, thing for us. I say that there were probably three or four moments on our show that were big monumental moments. One person I need to thank, probably first and foremost, is the mayor of Detroit at the time, Kwame Kilpatrick, for
Of
being
course.
the worst mayor, the most corrupt mayor in the history of cities, and he allowed us to get a lot of content out of him. And Justin Bieber probably was one of the number two, you know, biggest things that we were able to capitalize off of. I mean, the people can Google the Bieber story because it's too long to go into, but he basically got offended over something that really was not offensible, but and then he came across as a jerk, and I just answered naturally to a question about, you know, he said something about, you know, something with my mom, and my mom has passed when I was 14, so I killed the bit. I said, "Don't say no in improv." Well, don't tell anybody that your mom died when they tell you that they want to sleep with your mom. So, well, Justin, my mom's dead, you know, and it just kills the bit right there.
Yeah,
So,
'cause he, yeah, I think he was a little offended, and then he tried to fire back, and then yeah, so then you killed a bit, and of course he hangs up the phone. And this is all on YouTube, by the way. Do you think that, you know, if you did run into him now and you thanked him for it, do you think you guys would be able to laugh about it, or do you think he's still kind of a little bit
I
big-headed
would
about
love
that
to.
stuff?
You know, we've tried to get him on interviews. And he doesn't do interviews with anybody anymore, it seems like, but I'd love to. That would be actually, before I retire, that would be a great interview I'd love to have. I need to get him for an interview, and I need to get Eminem for an interview. Eminem's mad at me because his ex-wife Kim said that he had a small penis on our show. So if I could get both those guys on, God, that would be so great. But we'll see. We'll see if that will ever happen.
Yeah, I guess so. Those are the two guys that you have like the most history with, that are kind of like key moments in the show, but you need to kind of come back, that you want to bring it full circle with. Who's the one person that you want to interview, maybe that you've never interviewed before, that is kind of just like a bucket list, like this is someone that is like just I would love to talk to this person on air.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ,
I
fair
figured
enough.
I would say, Jesus, what's it like having the same outfit every day that you don't have to wear anything different, you know? Like
Yeah,
you
you
know
know,
exactly what you're gonna wear every day.
the greatest people, Einstein was the same way. And there, yeah, you know, maybe we'll have the
Isn't that
second coming of
amazing?
Christ, and you'll be able to chat with Jesus, or that would be, I think that would do ratings, I think. That would be good.
You know what's crazy is it's funny I think about that. If I could interview anybody that was alive or dead, somebody asked me this question, and I thought of my answer, and I did say Jesus Christ, and I take it back. I'd like to interview my mom. And ask a lot of questions,
What
you know.
do you think you'd ask?
Probably what, you know, heaven's like, you know, or ask the question, you know, about remembering like the past, you know, remember what was I like?
That's powerful stuff, Mojo. So, I mean, yeah, I think it's a good way to start wrapping up. Before we do close, I have one final question for you. 23 years of this so far in this market, National Radio Hall of Fame nominee last year. Hopefully, fingers crossed that you'll get the
I
nod
didn't
one
win this
day.
year.
Oh,
I
you
didn't
didn't
win this year,
officially?
so, but no, but I guess I'm nominated again for the third year. I'm the Alan Trammell of radio.
Right.
You know,
We'll make it
he
happen.
got in one day,
He
hopefully.
finally did. He finally did. And he was reunited with his double playmate, Lou Whitaker, in the hall. So that was good. But it really, you've like I said earlier, you've become a staple of this community, and you still have a long way to go in terms of, like, it doesn't seem like you're retiring anytime soon. But I wanted to end by asking you what you hope you're remembered for when it's all said and done. I'm not sure if that's something you think about, but what do you hope is the legacy you leave on your listeners and the broadcast radio industry when you finally hang it up?
That he wasn't a dick.
Okay.
Yeah. That, you know, that he did stuff like this, you know. I joke a lot to people that I used to call radio people all the time, and maybe 10% of them would call back. But the 1% that I wanted the most was a guy by the name of Kid Craddock, and I'll never forget phone call. He was in a convertible. That's when I knew you made it, when you had a convertible. And then one of my first really nice cars I ever bought was a convertible. And I remember he called me and he's talking. You can hear the wind blowing. And I was in Arizona doing the morning show, and he hey, just wanted to call and say hi to you. You know, he's on a cell phone, which at that time, not everybody had cell phones. You know, you were just starting to get them. And he goes, I listened to your show. And again, back then, you weren't streamed. You had to get somebody actually had to send him a tape, which was me. And he said, I loved this, this, and this. I think you say this a little too much. And I think that you should redo this bit one more time. I think you'll do it better the next time. And for some reason, I was like flustered, and I said to him, "Can we talk again tomorrow?" And he goes, "Tomorrow?" And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "You may be the only person who's ever asked that if we could talk again tomorrow." He goes, "All right, I'll call you at the same time." He hung up the phone, and the next day he called again, and I had my thoughts set because, you know, like you prep for this, I had no prep for that phone call, so I prepped for that phone call. I still remember sitting on the couch in our house in Tucson, and I had a notebook with questions for him, and we must have talked for almost an hour. And I always thought that if I ever made it in this business, that I would try to at least do that for somebody else. And 'cause it's the least we can do. And you got to do the same.
Of
So
course.
me doing this, somebody asked you to be on their podcast, you know, you got to figure out a time to do it, you
Pass it on,
know.
of course.
And the other thing too is when you are hosting your own show, and somebody asks you, hey, can I shadow you and be an intern for you? You know, give a guy a break, you know, and steal the idea of the Burger King McDonald's idea.
Yeah.
You know, think of whatever it is. So
absolutely.
you'll be able to be, you know, the reason why somebody was able to pave the way.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm really proud of you, Jackson. You are extremely prepared as an interviewer, and not a lot of guys, you know, and talented, you know, or people are smart and talented enough at your age to do that. You taught me a lot. You're much more prepped than I am sometimes.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That means a lot. And there are certain moments that you, that you have, and it's, I've heard it described in a way where it's like someone will give you a compliment. Someone you really look up to will just give you one compliment, and that can fuel your motivation for years. And just that one compliment alone. And, you know, this interview means the world to me, and this will stick with me for sure.
Dude, I'm proud of you. I really am.
Thanks.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. And you can hear Mojo in the Morning every weekday from 6 to 10 p.m. on channel 955 or the iHeartRadio.
Download our podcast.
Download the podcast Mojo, as well. The More Mojo podcast. The actual show.
Search Mojo in the Morning or More Mojo, and then listen to the podcast of my wife and I. So my wife and I have a podcast called the We Don't Podcast. It's on the More Mojo platform. And that, talk about raw. You know, tell your parents to listen to that. Have your mom listen to it. I'll talk to you later, buddy.
All right. Thanks very much, Mojo. We'll talk to you
later. Take care, buddy. Proud of you.
All right, SummerSlam. First and foremost, this is not a recap. This is not a SummerSlam recap. I would do that in a whole separate pod that would be well thought out and well researched, and I would, you know, put all this thought into it, which I like to do for these podcasts typically, but this is just going to be off the dome. A great interview with Mojo this week, but I also had a great experience at Ford Field this past weekend. I wanted to talk about it. I wanted to talk about it on the podcast because wrestling is something that I love, and it's something that I don't talk about on here for some reason all that much. Maybe it's because I, you know, don't have very many friends that like wrestling, and most of them think it's stupid, so I assume that my listeners will also think it's stupid. I don't know. But basically, this is going to be off the top of the dome. Hopefully, we'll start talking about wrestling a little more on here because it is something I'm passionate about, and I like to think I know just as much about it as the NBA or, you know, professional squash or any of that stuff that we talk about on here. By the way, hopefully, we're going to get back into some NFL football this year as well. You know, we kind of took a hiatus last year. Was really locked in on the NBA. Wasn't watching a whole lot of NFL football, but I think this year we're gonna try to reverse that, to buck that trend, and we're gonna get back in the NFL as well. But SummerSlam, so once again, you know, don't take this too seriously. It's just, you know, my experience and then some of my thoughts on the major storylines going on in WWE right now. So, for those of you who don't know, I live in the suburbs of Detroit. I am about half an hour away from Ford Field. 25 minutes, half an hour on a good day when there's no traffic. So maybe it took me 35, 40 minutes to get there on Saturday. And, you know, traffic wasn't too bad because I went down early. So I went down, parked in the parking garage, which is about half a mile from the stadium. I walked to Campus Martius in Detroit, which is kind of like this, you know, center of downtown, central plaza with all of these cool stores and restaurants. They have these basketball courts there that are, you know, beautifully designed, and it's just a cool little area to kind of walk around. So stopped there, just walked around, people watched for a little bit. They had a pop-up store in one of the major buildings, one of the high rises on the first floor. They had a WWE pop-up shop because SummerSlam was there, so they had, you know, they were selling merch and t-shirts and all this stuff. I could not resist, I did secure a beautiful black Cody Rhodes t-shirt with the Cody Rhodes logo, which was on fire. I was hoping they would have something maybe in the red, white, and blue. I think that would have been more up my alley, but they did have the logos on fire. What did it say on the back? Something Nightmare Family. Claim your kingdom, Nightmare Family, which is whatever. So, adding to my collection of wrestling shirts, which we will... I haven't thought about this. Am I going to be bringing these to college next year? Because, you know, we're certainly not going to be wearing these at the at various parties or functions, especially when females are going to be present. That's probably not the best idea. So I will have them. I will probably bring them, and I will choose wisely when I decide to bust them out. Regardless, got myself a nice t-shirt right next door to the pop-up shop where I'm looking at my phone. It was around 6:45. The show started at 8. So I'm like, yeah, let me get a little grub. Potbelly's next door. I'm a big iced coffee guy. I'm a big caffeine guy. And I'll do caffeine in the morning, and then I'll do caffeine in the late afternoon, early evening. Because if I don't have like, you know, my caffeine late in the evening, this is not without fail, but a lot of the times I will be very tired, I will be very fatigued, I'll be ready to fall asleep. So, you know, I'll be ready to fall asleep at 10 p.m. So I like to have my caffeine in the evening. Starbucks next door to Potbelly's, it's closed. I go into Potbelly's, and we feasted. For those of you who don't know, right off the bat, this is off the dome, so you're getting all this. We're going to go a little off the beating path. We're just going to do a little BTS, because I feel like I don't talk about myself all that much on here. So this is a little behind the scenes. What is Jackson really like? What is he really like in real life? Because he's always talking about basketball, squash, interviews, and we always hear from his guests, but we don't hear from him. So this is your opportunity to hear from me. Go to Potbelly's. Here's something you should know about me, is for a person my age, of my gender, of the male gender, who is my size, I think I weigh around 175, which is maybe five to 10 pounds too, you know, heavier than I would like for someone who's going to be a collegiate squash player. You know, 5 pounds too. I don't think it's a big issue, but regardless, I'm a somewhat bigger guy for my size. I'm about 5'11", and I do eat a lot, yes, but I also have eyes that are much bigger than my stomach. So I do eat more than most people, but oftentimes I will bite off more than I can chew, metaphorically and also quite literally. So I will go into these restaurants and I will look at a menu and I'll see, oh, this appetizer looks really good, this entree looks really good, I gotta get this, and then I gotta do this, that, and the other thing, and I got all this food in front of me, and here's the problem, is I finish it. I always finish it, because if you put the food in front of me, I'm gonna finish it. Sometimes it would be better if I just threw in the towel and was like, no, this is too much, I can't do this. But my pride kicks in. I cannot leave food on the table. I cannot waste the food. And I'm not a big, like, to-go guy. I'm not like, oh, I'm going to take this to-go. Because usually, if I order all this food, like, I'm not going to have, like, a bunch of it left over. I'm going to have, like, you know, 7 or 8 bites left over of something. Like, so, you know, a small portion left over. And if I bring it home, I put it in the fridge, and I warm it up the next day, I'm going to be disappointed at how small the portion is, because I've already ate most of it. So I'm not a big take-it-home guy. I'm usually just like, let me eat here, and let me get it done with. And, I don't like to waste. So now that we have that precedent set, I go into Potbelly's. I was relatively hungry. I'm not starving. I was decently hungry. I just hadn't ate dinner. I think I had lunch probably 4 or 5 hours prior, so I could definitely eat. I go in, I get the big sub sandwich, which is the biggest size. Yeah, not a mini, not a regular. We got a big, which oftentimes is meant to share, or it's meant to take some home, or it's for someone who's, you know, has a huge, huge appetite. So I got the big, and I'm like, you know, this is going to be a lot, but, you know, I'm pretty hungry. I'll wolf this down. So I got that. And I'm sorry, you must be very confused, because I started talking about caffeine and then got away from that. So caffeine, the Starbucks next door is closed, so I was pretty bummed out. I'm like, I'll probably just get a pop at the stadium or something, but that's, you know, not as much caffeine as coffee might have, and I was a little bit upset by that. I didn't expect Potbelly to have coffee, which they didn't. They didn't have straight-up coffee, but everyone knows Potbelly has great milkshakes. I see on the menu a nitro cold brew Potbelly milkshake. Interesting. I said, does that have, like, you know, is that like a legit coffee situation? And they said, yes, it is. I said, put me down for a cold brew milkshake. So now we've got the milkshake, which is sizable. That's a lot of that's a lot of calories. We've got the big sandwich, and I'm checking out. I'm like, how am I going to finish all this food? And guys, I go to the register and I see this gigantic oatmeal chocolate chip cookie staring me right between the eyes. It had my name written all over it. I could not resist. I get the cookie as well. So now by the time I've checked out, I've gotten all my food. It's 7 o'clock and I got to wolf this down because I still now I've walked even further away from the stadium to get this food. I have about a mile walk to get to the stadium. So I got to eat all this food, get in there. I don't want to walk in at 8 o'clock. I got to find my seats. So I'm wolfing this down. I was listening to, shout out the Wrestle Talk podcast. Great podcast, great company, Wrestle Talk. My boy Blompier, my boy Ollie Davis, my boy Luke Owen, Chopper Pete Quinnell. Great squad over there. I was listening to Chopper Pete and Lukewarm Luke Owen giving their SummerSlam predictions for the pay-per-view as I was getting ready to go to the stadium. And one interesting thing that Luke said was he predicted that Jimmy Uso was going to return from injury and he was going to cost Jey Uso the main event match against Roman Reigns. And I sat there and I thought to myself, I'm like, I can absolutely see that happening. Like that. So now it's important to note that was on my radar. So I'm listening to that. That's the background noise as I'm noshing. I finish, thank the employees, who are wonderful people, by the way. The Detroit Campus Martius, Potbelly employees. Outstanding customer service. I hope they all get raises. I hope that someone hears this and can do something about that. So I walk to the stadium. We get there around 7:45. I kind of, you know, walk around a little bit. No, you know, 7:40. Find my seat. Sit next to a young man named Jaden, 10 years old. Plays you know, quite the athlete. Tackle football, basketball, all these different sports, and he knew his wrestling. I don't think I was even watching wrestling when I was 10. I think I started watching when I was 11 years old. He knew his stuff. I was very impressed. Jaden knew a lot more than I did about professional wrestling throughout my early years viewing pro wrestling. He was way ahead of me as an 11, 12, 13, 14-year-old. So I was very impressed by Jaden's, in basketball we call it ball knowledge. I guess we can call it ring knowledge or whatever it may be. So shout out Jaden, and the show begins. So once again, I'm not going to go through the whole card. But we'll start out with the Roman bloodline part of this, and then we'll kind of go through some, we'll go about business, however it comes up. Once again, we're going off the dome. So the match starts, and I guess it's important that I state my position on Roman Reigns before I go into this, is I think that, you know, Roman Reigns main evented the first pay-per-view I ever watched in WWE, which was WrestleMania 32. And of course, he's this dude with the sick vest and the long hair, and he looks so cool, and he's this big baby face, and he overcomes the odds and beats Triple H. That being said, everyone's booing him in the stadium. Why is that happening? So I from a young age, liked Roman Reigns. That was the first wrestling t-shirt I bought. I think I bought two. That was a birthday present of mine. The following year was, I think I got a Roman Reigns shirt and a New Day shirt, I believe. And big Roman Reigns guy for a long time. I didn't understand why people hated him. And then as I became more hip to the wrestling industry, I started to realize, okay, people feel that Roman's being shoved down their throats. He's getting pushed too hard. He's taking opportunities away from other talent. We are just not into Roman Reigns. That's why we're booing him. So I began to understand, and I began to recognize, okay, these people are probably right. Is, you know, this whole Roman babyface gimmick is getting kind of old. Roman goes away, obviously, during COVID. He comes back, and over these last 3 years, he has done absolutely the best work of his career. And I don't think anyone disagrees with that. Whether you like Roman or you don't, I think people can appreciate now that he has finally turned heel and that WWE has embraced the fact that you know, people aren't as fond of him. And one day he will become a babyface again. He's got many years left in him. But looking through it, it's like, this is a guy that has main evented 7 of the last 9 WrestleManias. He has main evented probably the majority of the big 4 pay-per-views in, you know, in the last, you know, 8 or 9 years. So starting with WrestleMania 31, WrestleMania 31 against Brock, and then Seth cashed in and won. WrestleMania 32 against Trips. WrestleMania 33 against Taker. WrestleMania 34 against Brock, which at that's when people really, like, people, oh my gosh, at that point people were like so out on Roman. And I mean, I don't even think that's fair. I think this whole time people are just like sick of Roman being shoved down their throats. WrestleMania 35, Roman had gone away because I believe his leukemia came back and he was in remission. He was doing all good. He came back, fought Drew McIntyre. That was not in the main event. WrestleMania 36, he was out because of the COVID pandemic. He was immune. He was more immune to COVID. He did not wrestle at that WrestleMania, although he may have been set to be in the main event in that COVID year. Well, I think he was set to face Strowman, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure if that was the main event or not. And then obviously he comes back later in 2020 and as the champion, main events 37 against Daniel Bryan and Edge, 38 he main events against Brock, and that's when they combined the titles, and then WrestleMania 39 against Cody Rhodes. And this is where people start to retroactively, you know, people are loving the Roman stuff. They're like, we're so glad he's heel. This bloodline stuff is so riveting. Heyman is the perfect mouthpiece to have next to him. Jay and Jimmy are these perfect supporting characters to have around him. Solo Sikoa is kind of this silent muscle that we think is really interesting. The Sami Zayn stuff was chef's kiss. Wonderful. I don't think the bloodline is where it is today without Sami Zayn. Unbelievable stuff. And then WrestleMania 39 comes around. People say, Roman's had the title for over 2.5 years. He's had it for over 900 days. It is time for a change. And everything set up for Cody to finally take the title off Roman. He did not. He lost, shockingly. And in that match, like, just the whole time, there's no doubt in, I don't think anyone's mind, certainly not my mind, that Cody was going to win that match. Cody was doing all his tributes to his father, Dusty Rhodes. He's pointing to the heavens. Very emotional match. You just felt the whole time, like, the way the match was built, it was building towards this reign finally ending. The way the match went, like, for example, this SummerSlam match this past weekend, at no point during the match did I think Roman was going to lose, because A, it just didn't make any sense for him to lose at that point, and B, the way the match played out, it didn't feel like this match was leading to the end of a 3-year title reign. With the Cody match, I think that's one of very few matches in this title run of Roman's where it felt like he was really gonna lose. And not to say that in these other matches there aren't near falls and stuff like that, but it really felt like this was Cody's moment and he doesn't win. So this is when WrestleMania 39, people start turning on Roman, and people start saying the bloodline stuff is great, but we've had enough of this. 2.5 years, 3 years now, we're sick of this. Cody should have won the title. And so I will share my thoughts about that in a moment, but back to the match. Roman and Jay go at it. Apparently, I was very surprised to hear this. Went 36 minutes, and this was the longest Roman Reigns pay-per-view title defense he's ever had in his career, which that number, what, you know, this title reign, I believe he's defended the title 29 times. I think I maybe once or twice on SmackDown, but almost all those have been on pay-per-view. And you think about how many title matches and title defenses he's had over the last nine years. It's got to be close to 100. It's well over 50. I'm very confident saying that. It's probably not 100. It's definitely going to be over 50. I'm very confident when I say that. So when you have over 50 title defenses, and this was the longest one, it didn't feel like that. And this match was not a bad match. It was absolutely one of Roman's weaker title defenses in this run. Is when you look at the Cody match, and everyone's upset about the result, but when you look at that match, and I went back and I actually rewatched that match last night, outstanding stuff. Just one absolutely match, probably is the best match of 2023 so far. Just brilliant stuff. Granted, I'm not watching New Japan. I'm not watching, you know, I watch WWE and AEW for the most part. And I've seen, you know, I'll watch like classic New Japan matches, but I'm not keeping up with it day to day. So give it between WWE and AEW, match of the year, Cody and Roman. Great stuff. Drew versus Roman in Wales at Clash of the Castle. Roman versus Sammy at Elimination Chamber. Roman's matches with Kevin Owens over this title run. Roman's, and even the, just the tag matches that he's had recently, the tag match with Solo against Sammy and Kevin, and then the tag match with Solo against Jimmy and Jay. Those were great matches. So Roman has built up this standard of, like, top guy in the company, putting everyone on his back, and I don't felt like that SummerSlam match with Jay necessarily delivered. That's the gamble you take when Roman wrestles the style that he does. It's very slow, it's very methodical, and it's very dramatic, and he's trying to tell a story. Clearly, he's not looking for big, you know, for huge top rope spots. He's looking to sell and placate to the crowd, and that's what he does best. And sometimes when it works, it works. But then when it doesn't work, you don't have that one spot to draw the crowd back in. When it doesn't work and it starts failing you, it can feel really boring. So that was the biggest problem with that match. Is I looked at my phone at, you know, to see the start time and the end time. I was curious how long it would go. And then I checked my phone again. We were 14 or 15 minutes into the match and absolutely nothing happened. Absolutely nothing of substance happened. I could have gone to the bathroom and came back and I wouldn't have missed anything of importance. Nothing happened until the end when Jimmy pulled Jay out of the ring and cost him the match. And not only cost him the match, but cost him the title of Tribal Chief. So people were not pleased about this. And just going through Twitter, listening to the WrestleTalk podcast the next day as well, they have a feature on their podcast where they do super chats and people can donate a certain amount of money. And if they do, then their chats are read aloud by the podcasters and the podcasters react to the chats. Excuse me. So based on those super chats, based on the, you know, probably hundreds of people that I read, you know, and comments that I read through on Twitter, replies and whatnot, is people were not pleased and they are sick of Roman. And they said a term that was thrown around a lot about this match was that WWE and the Bloodline storyline has jumped the shark with this. Here's what I'll say to that. I don't think anyone really believes that. Because my thought is this SummerSlam match maybe was a little bit worse than some of the other matches in terms of the in-ring wrestling, but in terms of the finish, and I think that's where people were really frustrated with, like, oh, this Jimmy and, you know, Jay should have won, some people are saying, and then B, you know, like, I don't want to see a program between Jimmy and Jay. That doesn't make any sense to me. So to those people, I will say, I actually am going to call you out. I don't think that's the case. I don't think you think that because of this match and this finish that this storyline has jumped the shark. I think that these are the same people that are salty that Cody lost at Mania this year, and now retroactively, every time Roman wrestles, they're going to be like, well, that was shit. Well, that was shit. And then, you know, when Roman goes on to, I don't even know when his next singles match is going to be, defending the title, because he's not advertised for Payback right now. He's not advertised to be on TV a whole lot. And I think that WWE is just going to run with this Jimmy and Jay thing, and Roman might not be on TV for the next month, which is silly that the champion is not going to be on TV and that the champion takes this much time off, in my opinion. But, you know, regardless, he might not be on TV. So I think people are just going to continue to shit on this Bloodline thing because they're salty that Cody is not champion. And I understand that. Personally, I wish Cody won the title at WrestleMania, at WrestleMania 39, because you can still do all this Bloodline story without the title. I actually think it makes it more interesting when Roman doesn't have the title, and then now he's feuding with his cousins, and I think it makes it a lot more interesting. And Cody is, don't want to say this, I think he's the best wrestler in the world right now. I think MJF makes a strong case, and once again, not watching New Japan, not watching a lot of these guys, but, like, he's next level. He is so good. Every time he walks down to the ring and opens his mouth, he's one of the best talkers in the history of our industry. And the story is so good. And this is why he's my favorite wrestler, is I love Cody, because when I was first getting into wrestling beyond just, like, being a little kid, like, observing it and rooting for the good guy to win. But when I really got into it is I started watching these indie matches, and my favorite independent wrestler was Cody Rhodes, because he had this incredible story. He was the guy that left WWE under his own volition, and he went out to make a name for himself on the indies. And then he started AEW, and he took the initiative, and he took the ball and ran with it. And it's just an inspiring story. Cody and Drew, those were the two guys that left WWE, made a name for themselves, and then came back better than ever. And that's why those are my two favorite guys. And so I have this personal connection with Cody. I love Cody. I know how special he is. I would have loved to see him win the title at WrestleMania. That being said, everyone complains and everyone says he should have won the title at Mania. Here's the thing. When it comes to Mr. Cody Rhodes, he started a company, little-known company called All Elite Wrestling, that is WWE's biggest competition since WCW many decades ago. And Cody Rhodes never won the world championship, but despite this, TNT champion a couple times over, and people oftentimes found themselves booing Cody Rhodes because he was this underdog babyface, and it was very reminiscent of the way that people would boo John Cena, because, Cody is very patriotic, very American, like Cena is, and had a lot of the same qualities. And people would boo him in AEW. People did not like how over he was. People did not want this go-lucky babyface to be shoved down their throats, so they booed him. Cody returns to WWE at WrestleMania 38, wrestles Seth Rollins, wins, goes on to have this incredible program with Seth Rollins, wins the feud. Hell in a Cell, he puts on one of the great WWE matches of this decade so far, with a torn pectoral muscle, a heroic performance by him. He wins the match. He comes back. He enters the Royal Rumble at number 30. So people could look at that. Maybe that's a bit of a lucky thing or a handout when he returns, wins the Royal Rumble, goes to WrestleMania. All he's done since he's come back to WWE is win, 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 sit on the shelf for a few months, come back, win the Rumble from the last entrant spot, and then go on to Mania and beat this guy that hasn't lost in 3 years. I think people would have been excited in the moment, but I question you, wrestling fans, and I need you to look in the mirror and think about this. After six months or so, if Cody was still the champion, would you find yourself booing Cody Rhodes? That is a question you need to ask yourself. So Cody losing at WrestleMania 39 builds him into an even more interesting character, because he's facing this adversity. He had this really great program with Brock Lesnar. The promos weren't great. Obviously, Cody's great on the mic, so he's going to make it work. But I didn't really understand what the point of the feud was or what they were fighting about and why they needed to have three matches. But all three of these matches were incredible. I am biased, yes, but I thought that the Brock-Cody match was by far the best match of the night of SummerSlam. The way that they played with the rules and the count-out piece of it, and Cody just, they built him into this great underdog that with this never say die attitude, and it worked. It didn't feel cheesy or off. It worked, and that's why Cody's so great, is because it works with him. So I just question if WWE fans would have booed him had he won at WrestleMania 39. Obviously not on that night, but down the road, now that he lost and now he has a full year to kind of recreate this quest and then win the title, I think people might be more ready to receive Cody as champion, and they will be less likely to boo him during his title reign. And maybe that was Triple H's logic. So I'm going to defend WWE here. That's the main thing that I was thinking of the day after SummerSlam, is all these people are kind of still so bummed that Cody didn't win the title. And I'm like, are we sure that these same people wouldn't have turned on Cody in the middle of his title reign? So those are my thoughts on that match. I think what you could do is maybe like a Shawn Michaels WrestleMania 26 type vibe with The Undertaker, where he loses to Undertaker at WrestleMania 25, and then he comes back and he's desperate to beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania 26. He has to beat The Undertaker. He knows he can beat The Undertaker. He must. And everything is leading up to the Royal Rumble. Everyone anticipates that Shawn Michaels is going to win the Royal Rumble so he can challenge Taker to a title match at WrestleMania. And he loses the Rumble, surprisingly, but still finds a way to, through the adversity, get a match with Taker at WrestleMania. Obviously, Taker won, and I think Cody should probably win at Mania 40. But I have no issue with it because Roman's doing good stuff. I still find the Bloodline stuff entertaining, and Cody's still going on and having his own great programs. But these are two top-of-the-card main event guys. I think if Cody takes the title off Roman at WrestleMania 40, I think, and finishes the story there, then I think that everything works out perfectly fine, and I think that WWE's handled this well. The Triple H era has been really good for WWE. He's doing great stuff in, you know, the last, you know, year and a half that he's taken over since Vince stepped down. And those are my thoughts, really. Like I said, you know, that Cody match was great. Other SummerSlam thoughts. The women's triple threat was really good. I've heard mixed reviews. I've heard a lot of people say it was really good. A lot of people say it was kind of rough. I thought it was really good. What I liked was that it wasn't a typical WWE triple threat match where you have two ladies in the ring fighting and then one kind of sitting on the outside selling. That happened, of course. There was a lot of that. But for a lot of the match is you had all three of them in the ring at once going at each other. And kind of taking turns going at each other, and it really all came together very beautifully. And I really liked that, because I think, you know, the point of a triple threat is you got three guys or gals going at each other, you know, but then you have typically you have one sitting on the outside of the ring for the majority of the time. Well, you know, and it obviously changes who it is, or it alternates, but different people come in and out of the match. So I like when WWE gets creative with these restrictions and they're like, no, we're going to just have all these girls go at it at once. The Bianca thing, I thought Bianca was hurt. They totally got me. Apparently on commentary, they were kind of really selling like this injury, and they kept putting the camera on Bianca, and they kept showing Bianca's injury, and they kept really focusing on it, and the commentators kept talking about it. In a match, Chopper P. Quinnell made this point that in a match where there was a real injury, perhaps the camera would have been focused on Charlotte and Asuka, and the commentators wouldn't have talked about the injury. It wouldn't have brought any more light to it than they did. So watching it on Peacock, it was maybe a little bit more obvious that it was a work. Watching it in the stands, I thought it was real. They totally got me. Bianca came back. She wins. And then Io Sky comes down, cashes in her Money in the Bank, which I think was actually the biggest pop of the night. I'm trying to think if, I mean, obviously LA Knight was a big pop. And, you know, Jay's entrance, Cody's entrance, Brock's entrance, Roman's entrance. Of course, a lot of the entrances. But that was, Io might have gotten the biggest pop of the night, and she deserves it. She's an incredible talent, and it's cool to see someone who is so talented and has paid their dues in this company finally get their moment. So that was really cool. Last thing, Logan Paul's really fucking good at this, and I'm not the first to say it, but he is, like, such a natural. Wow, man, he's and not even to say that the, you know, him and Ricochet went out there and put on a 5-star match or even a 4.5 star match or anything like that, but it was just like he's just has like the it factor. There are certain guys who just have the it factor. He knows how to play with the crowd, and his facial expressions are next level. They're not like just it's deep and they're well thought out. And he's such a freakish athlete, and he's so good at this, man. He is so good at this. So I'm not gonna do a full recap, but those are my main thoughts on SummerSlam. This went longer than I thought. I think that I got all my thoughts out. So really, this is just for me to document, and I figure, yeah, I'll share it with the people as well. But those are my experience at SummerSlam this year. Hopefully this was somewhat entertaining for you guys. Once again, I cannot thank Mojo enough for taking the time. He was so good to me last summer as I interned for him, and so much wisdom, so much insight. Obviously, the one thing that I think all of us can take away from this is the Burger King story that he shared, and learning to fight through adversity, not take the easy way out. I think that's a great lesson that we can all learn from. So Mojo, class individual, stand-up guy, and can't thank him enough. So once again, you can listen to the Mojo in the Morning show every Monday through Friday. I believe the official time is like 6:10 to 12 or excuse me, 6:10 to 10:20 p.m. if I'm not mistaken, unless they changed it since last summer, which I don't see why they would. So I believe it's give or take, it's 6 to 10 a.m. and you can listen to them there. You can listen to the full show back if you missed the show live on the Mojo in the Morning podcast feed. So there's that podcast, and there's the More Mojo podcast that he does as well, and you can listen to that. And then there's the podcast that he does with his wife. So a whole lot of content that Mojo's pumping out for the people these days. And once again, can't thank him enough. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Mojo. I hope you enjoyed my little adventure, and we'll see you guys soon. Peace. Say I want fame so bad, it's all I can think about. Yeah, that I'm on a billboard and I'm making my mama proud. Yeah. Hosting a meet and greet and I'm signing my signature, yeah. Random people, they stopping me, can I get in a pic with ya? Oh, hey, oh. I look in the crowd, yeah. And I got fans now, goddamn, I got fans now. Oh, hey, oh. They singing out loud now. They singing my words out, they singing my words. Say I just want the fame.